Hi, welcome to Two Blurred Girls. Yay! I'm Tamika. Tamara will be joining us next week, I believe, is when she will be off from her hiatus. Yay! We can't wait. You're probably wondering, why am I wearing these Minnie Mouse ears? I have Minnie Mouse ears for the audio audience. I don't know why, but it does make sense now because Home Alone 1 and 2 are on the Disney Channel. So there you go. It makes sense. So just roll with it. So this is I don't want to call it a spoiler review because I hope you have seen Home Alone by now, but I guess I'll call it a spoiler review. So this is the spoiler review for Home Alone 1 and 2. Home Alone 1 came out in 1990, and Home Alone 2 came out in 1992. And these are comedy films, holiday comedy films. They were directed by Chris Columbus, who has directed many films. And I think, yeah, he directed Harry Potter too. So, and of course, it was written by the late, great John Hughes, who is very big into a lot of the teen 80 movies that I guess my generation grew up with, those millennials. You know, like the Brat Pack, you may have heard of Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, you know, those type of movies. So John Hughes wrote those movies. It stars Macaulay Culkin in both films. Joe Pesci from Raging Bull. Every gangster film you can think of, even Casino with Sharon Stone, which is surprising that he would do a family film because this is supposed to be a family film and it's Joe Pesci. But anyway, so Joe Pesci is in it. Also, Daniel Stern is in it. He's from City Slickers and a couple other movies, I assume, too. But I haven't seen the rest of the movies. But I did like him in City Slickers. John Hurt, who was in an episode of Sopranos after, you know, the Home Alone movies came out. A few years after it came out, actually. Which is very weird to see him in a Sopranos episode. But anyway, John from Movie Lovers Unite, he did Talking Sopranos. So you can check out his podcast on Talking Sopranos. And he'll probably go into how John Hurt, who plays the dad, was in. Oh, crazy. And Catherine O'Hara, who played in Beetlejuice, if you know that film. So, Home Alone. So I'll try to see if I can review and talk about some facts of the Home Alone movies and see if I can compress it into an hour and 30 minutes. So wish me luck. But yeah, so Home Alone, like I said, it came out in 1990. It is mostly about Kevin McAllister and the McAllister family. They are prepping for their annual trip. So they always take these trips during the holidays. And in this film, they're going to Paris. So basically, you know, a brawl, a disagreement with Buzz, the older brother of Kevin, breaks out over pizza. Kevin's punished. He goes upstairs to the attic, which is very strange. He said, "Oh, I wish that I never saw my family again. I hate you all." You know, things you tell your parents when you're angry at them. So the next morning, the parents and the family, they're all scattering. And they do these head counts and they think everybody is on the plane, but they miscounted and they left Kevin and he's at home alone. Thus the title of the movie. So basically the film is just about how he copes with being home alone. And he looks like he's about 7 or 8. How he copes with being home alone and then defending the house against these two burglars played by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern. And the burglars are called Marv and Harry, I believe. So that's basically the premise of the movie. I wanted to point out a few facts that I found interesting about Home Alone. And it came from this Netflix series, which I hope you all will check out. It's called The Movies That Made Us. And this comes from season 1. So Home Alone is the highest grossing comedy of all time, or it can be disputed. It made close to $1 billion. The idea of Home Alone, which I didn't know, but it was interesting, like I said, from this documentary. The idea of Home Alone, of course, came from John Hughes, but the main idea came from working with Macaulay Culkin earlier on a film called Uncle Buck, which stars John Candy. So John Hughes was really impressed by Macaulay Culkin so much that he wanted to center a film around him because he'd never done a film with someone that young before, and he wanted to just push the boundaries and challenge himself. So that was the inspiration basically behind Home Alone, just him working with Macaulay Culkin from Uncle Buck. You know, John hires Chris Columbus, who he was directing Christmas Vacation. And there was a lot of drama with Chevy Chase on that film, but I'm not going to go too much into that. So he got Chris Columbus to direct Home Alone. And what I also found interesting, too, was that for the film, they considered John Lovitz, who was on SNL, and Robert De Niro to play the role of Harry and Marv, which would have been an interesting film, I would say, if you had those two choice of men play. Oh boy, the criminals. The film was shot in a high school. It was not shot in the infamous house that we see. The house was chosen because it's a wholesome look, but mostly the inside was sets built in a school in Chicago, which we all know John Hughes loved to film in Chicago because that's his home. And he hated to film in Hollywood and anything to do with the Hollywood types. The school was called New Tier High School, and it was just an abandoned high school in Chicago. So John Hughes shot all his films there, even Pretty in Pink and all that other stuff. The film was, I have a couple of notes. Yeah. So majority of the film was shot in the high school gym, which was really awesome that they put together all those sets to make it look like the home that we see. And we're assuming, oh, you know, he's in a house. But I have to commend the set builders and the production and everybody else who worked on the film, basically, because it did look realistic and everything. So some other facts as I'm going along and trying to go along. The WB, or Warner Brothers, they originally were the studios to have this film shot in Home Alone. They wanted it filmed at $10 million, but John Hughes said that with the pyrotechnics and everything else, it would probably be $14.7 million that we would need to complete the film budget. So Warner Brothers was concerned, and they wanted, there was a lot of negotiation and back and forth. So they said, what about 13 and, you know, all that other stuff. So John Hughes met with some execs from Fox, 20th Century Fox. And it was some questionable terms and backhanded deals going on. But basically, due to budget concerns, Warner Brothers shut down the filming of Home Alone. So while they shut it down, coming through the back door was 20th Century Fox, who made a deal with John Hughes to shoot it for, I guess, just 14 or whatever he needed, because they believed in the story and they wanted to back it. So basically, Warner Brothers lost out on Home Alone. You know, anytime you are writing a movie, of course you don't know if this movie is going to be successful or it's going to be big, like a highest grossing film. So Home Alone technically was like this low budget film that not many people believed in, but the major players did. So Warner Brothers, you lost out on that deal. Some other interesting facts that I found out was that for the scenes with Harry and Marv, like their stunts were based on Looney Tunes scenes. That was used as reference, you know. And you can see it too in Home Alone when they're going through the traps. You can see like how Marv or Harry, the way they fall, both their legs fly up in the air. And then you hear these little noises that they make and all the traps that Kevin put in place in the house. You can see a Looney Tunes vibe from that. So I thought that was really funny that the writers and the producers and everyone else, whoever, they were using Looney Tunes as a reference point for the stunts. Oh boy, very, very funny. The movie was shot on Valentine's Day, 1990, and it wasn't snowing in Chicago at that time, and they had to manufacture some of the snows for the earlier scenes. And I think they used like potato flakes, potato shavings or something. It was very weird and disgusting. but later on, you know, they got the money shot they needed, and there was a huge snowstorm in Chicago. Another fact from Home Alone was that Joe Pesci, Chris Columbus said that Joe Pesci had a difficult time with the script, mostly because in all his movies, he cussed a lot, which we all know Joe Pesci. So this is supposed to be a family-friendly film, and it was very difficult for him to not cuss or anything. So he would just make up languages. And I know in one scene where when he slipped, like Kevin iced down or watered down the stairs to his house, right? And it iced over the steps. And Harry slipped on those steps and he fell on his back and he was like, fricker, fracker, frugal. So he was making all these noises with his mouth. I'm sure he really wanted to say a lot of things. I'm trying to make this show family friendly if I can. I'm sure he wanted to say a lot of things, but he chose to just make up these weird, funny languages, you know, like how you don't want to cuss in front of kids and you just say fricker, fracker, frico, fracker. Or you can do the line from the infamous Christmas Story, oh, fudge, you know, whatever. But yeah, so Home Alone came out Thanksgiving 1990. It was number one for 2 weeks in a row, and it continued to climb throughout that year and into 1991. and it made over $285 million, and it's probably like billions now. So that was a few facts I wanted to just point out from the Movies That Made Us. So you can catch that on Netflix. The Movies That Made Us, they do a lot of facts, and they talk to the directors, the producers, the actors, whoever worked on the film, they talk to them. So catch that out too on Netflix. But anyway, so we talked about the general basis or overview of what Home Alone is about. A few of my favorite scenes, I guess, I really like the way that Chris Columbus directed this film, and watching how he directed the children from the documentary I told you about, like the Movies That Made Us, the actors that were telling us, the audience, that he got on their level. You know, he told them, well, why don't you say this to your brother? Why don't you say that? So it really made the kids in the film seem more fleshed out and not one-dimensional in a sense. Like, you can really relate to Buzz, because everybody has a Buzz as a brother who's a bully, and everybody has an uncle, like in Home Alone, or everybody has a mother or father or whatever. So the characters were really relatable, and I have to credit Chris Columbus and John Hughes for that, because they did a really good job on that film. Also, just the way that everything throughout the film was very Christmassy, you know, like the colors were always red, green, these different hues of colors. Even Kevin throughout the film, he would wear like this red sweater. Like, I don't know if the color schemes were intentional, but I thought that was a really smart choice, you know. Also, I think what really, I guess what really stands out for me, besides the color themes and the way that Chris Columbus directed the film, I don't know, I guess basically the stunts. So, well, let me go back. Just how you can relate to Kevin, you know, when he's home alone. And if you ever been home alone by yourself as a kid, you could do anything that you want to do that your parents told you you couldn't do. So in the movie, Kevin would jump on the bed. He would go in his brother's room. He would read Playboy, but yeah. He'd go in his brother's room. He'd jump on the bed. He'd eat ice cream as late as he wants. And he watched this film, which I would like to see the rest of this film. I think it was called Angels with Dirty Wings, but it was like a 1940s or 50s gangster film within the movie. You know, he was watching this film. And that goes to show you, too, like, how relatable that is. Like, when you're home alone, you watch films you're not supposed to watch. And Kevin obviously wasn't supposed to watch this gangster film, but he's watching it. He eats ice cream. He orders pizza, which is awesome. And that's one of my favorite scenes, too. So when the pizza guy comes and, you know, Kevin doesn't have much money, so he orders his favorite. It was just a cheese pizza. The pizza guy comes and he's like, okay, that'll be such and such. So Kevin uses the film, the gangster film, as an intimidation tactic. And he plays it right. He plays the film right at the right moments where he's like the character is telling the pizza guy, it seems like, keep the change, you filthy animal, and all this other stuff. But and then he turns it up loud when the scene in the film where they're shooting, and it intimidates the pizza guy, and he runs out. So anyway, Kevin got free pizza. But and the stunts, I would go to the stunts. Now, some of my favorite stunts in Home Alone was the first stunt where Harry and Marv are at the door, right? So they're trying to break in and they're trying to come up with a plan or whatever. They're just kind of talking amongst themselves. And Kevin is on the other side of the door and he has this BB gun in his hand. And he goes through the doggy door and he just shoots. I think it was Harry. He shoots him in the nuts. Sorry, family friendly ears. yeah, he shoots him in the nuts. And of course that hurts. I don't know. I don't have nuts. I'm a girl. so he shoots him in the nuts. And then for some reason, Marv had this brilliant idea to stick his head through the doggy door to see if the kid was still there. And of course he got shot in the forehead. So that was one of my favorite stunts. The other stunt I can remember from the film is when Harry opened the door, and when he opened the door, the string was attached to a blowtorch and it set his head on fire. I thought that was hilarious. I don't know. Like, if you step out of the film, you would say, oh, God, all this is violent for a children's film or a family-friendly film. I would just tell you to lighten up because this is Home Alone and this is sacred territory. And if we want violence, we will have violence in our family-friendly films. But another one of the burglar traps that I found interesting was that one of my favorite ones was when Marv, he's in the basement, right? And this is Daniel Stern's character. So Marv's in the basement and he's trying to find a light. So he finds a light and he pulls on the cord, and as soon as he pulls on the cord, an iron comes and just smacks him in the face, and you can see the iron print on his face. And in the documentary, The Movies That Made Us, Daniel Stern was talking about how iconic that scene was, that people he don't know would come up to him and show them tattoos of his face with that iron imprint on it. And that shows you the impact that Home Alone had on a generation of audiences, that somebody would get your face tattooed on them. anyway. All my other favorite burglar trap scene was when Harry and Marv, they were going upstairs, right? And they were trying to chase Kevin. And he has these paint cans, and he attaches them to ropes and he just flings them from the banister, and they smack Harry and Marv in the face. And of course they fall down, which I thought was hilarious, but maybe I just grew up with violence. I don't know. I think another scene was when, I want to say Harry came into a room and then plastic wrap and glue, or he walked into this plastic wrap, glue, whatever, on his face. And then he walked again and he tripped over a rope, which turned on a fan, and also feathers were on him as well. So he basically looked like a chicken. My other favorite burglar trap scene, well, it's not really a burglar trap scene, but Buzz had a tarantula. So, you know, when earlier in the film, when Kevin went to Buzz's room, he basically tore up his stuff and the tarantula got out of the cage or the box or whatever. So the tarantula is roaming around the house, and it's right to the point where you think Marv has Kevin. You know, this is after the paint can scenes where they come to. So he's grabbing on Kevin's leg. And when he grabs on Kevin's leg, Kevin sees the opportunity to get away by using Buzz's tarantula, who's crawling around. So he puts the tarantula on Marv's face. And Marv, who, like I said, is played by Daniel Stern, he lets out this scream that I have never heard a man scream before. It is the highest pitched scream. And even if you turn the volume down, you can still hear it. It's like echoes through your ear, and you can hear the pain in the scream. But it's just a tarantula on his face. I don't know if his scream is infamous or not, but Daniel Stern has one of the best screams. And if you close your eyes, you would say, oh my God, somebody help that woman. They're in pain. But yeah, he has like a amazing scream, amazing comedic timing. I thought him and Joe Pesci, surprisingly, you know, were a great comedy team in this. Of course, the stunts weren't done by them. They were done by a team of stuntmen. But I think one of the stunts that was done in Home Alone But one of the stunts that was done on Home Alone, it's done in other films as well. I guess other comedy films. One of the burglar traps, when they were trying to run after Kevin, he laid out a line of toy cars. And Marv and Harry, you know, they like these trip over these toy cars or whatever, and their legs fly in the air. So anyway, amongst stuntmen, that's called the Home Alone. And that stunt is used in other comedic films. So that's something that Home Alone made a mark in that area. But yeah, these stuntmen, just seeing what they went through, just you could see the pain that these stunts may have caused, just like going up slippery stairs and falling on your back, getting your head blowtorched, slipping on cars and falling on your back, maybe paint cans. I don't know. They had to do a lot of falls. And I think the director, Chris Columbus, he wanted the stunts to look like they hurt. So I guess to give the audience a sick people joy in seeing other people in pain, which I thank you, Chris Columbus. I really did enjoy him in pain. But yeah, so, you know, while all this is going on, the mom, you know, of course she realizes earlier in the film that Kevin is missing. So she tries to get her way back from Paris to Chicago. But of course, all the flights are booked. So she has a layover flight. She gets kind of like a layover flight or something like that, where she gets somewhere close to Chicago. And then she meets up with a polka group, which is the lead polka person is John Candy. And John Candy really wasn't paid for his cameo in Home Alone. He pretty much did it as a favor to John Hughes. And the interaction between Catherine O'Hara, who plays Kevin's mom, and John Hughes was unscripted. You know, everything that John Candy did in the film was improvised, and it shows the talent that man had. And he still is really missed. Like, I really miss John Candy still to this day. But anyway, so the mom hitches a ride with this polka group. She gets back home to Kevin, and they make amends, you know. And then I think from all of this, Kevin learned that while it is cool, it can be cool to be home alone by yourself, it does get lonely. And everybody wants their family around for Christmas. Not to mention that he was almost killed by burglars. So, yeah. That's pretty much Home Alone. And it is a timeless classic. I think Chris Columbus was saying, I think there was some kind of orchestra. They did the whole Home Alone movie and the scores, which John Williams did the score for Home Alone. And John Williams did other scores for Indiana Jones and Star Wars. So he was very infamous in the scores, musical scores. But yeah, so that's Home Alone. And like I said, it's on Disney Plus, so check it out. And that's the reason, if you're just joining, that I have these Minnie Mouse ears on. And I just put them on for no reason at all, but they match the theme of Disney, so let's just roll with it. So following up with Home Alone, we have Home Alone 2. So Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. I would say the first Home Alone is a fan favorite. Maybe Home Alone 2, it's a divide among fans. I like Home Alone 2. But anyway, Home Alone 2, which came out in 1992, the original cast is still there, but now we have Tim Curry and Rob Schneider. And this was Rob Schneider's first feature film, which I didn't know. And that's pretty cool. So you would think, like, okay, so they left the kid by accident, right, in the first film. Surely they won't leave the kid again at home. And you're right, they don't leave the kid at home. But Home Alone 2, you know, we're followed up again with the McAllister's annual holiday trip, but this time they're going to Miami, Florida, which I have no idea why. And I am just like Kevin. There's no Christmas trees in Florida. What are we doing going here? But it's fine. you know, they're getting ready, like the first film. You see the chaos of the family packing and trying to get ready for their trip. So we're also introduced to Kevin with a toy, and it's called the Talk Boy, and it's a recording device. And when Home Alone 2 came out and I was a kid, I really wanted the Talk Boy, and it was in Toys R Us. It was everywhere. Like, you can record people and you can put them in like funny voices, whatever. I just thought it was really cool. And I think with Home Alone 2, this was mostly the most marketable movie, I would say, of the Home Alone franchises, especially with the Talk Boy. I mean, that sold out a lot, and that was a hot Christmas commodity when it came out. But yeah, so Home Alone 2, like I said, family's planning their trip, right? But they're also gearing up for a Christmas pageant. Oh boy. So at this Christmas pageant, you know, we have Kevin and then Buzz behind him. So this is Kevin's solo part, and his solo part's coming up, and he is singing so beautifully. Sounds so angelic. And his Dick brother, sorry, Disney ears. you know, he has these fake candlesticks or whatever, and he's just like playing like behind his head, doing all this weird stuff behind his head, you know, with the candlesticks, making fun of him basically and embarrassing him again. So once Kevin finishes his solo, he pushes Buzz, and then everybody in the choir starts tumbling down like bowling pins. It is hilarious. And even the woman that's at the piano, she falls backwards and her legs flying up in the air with her pantyhose everywhere. It was funny. But anyway, you know, once again, which I don't understand why the family always takes Buzz's side. They always believe him. I mean, I know Kevin is like a little brat, but Buzz does start most of the shit. Sorry. Done with not cussing anymore. So anyway, you know, like the first film, Kevin's upstairs. He's punished. Go upstairs. Go to your room. So the family trip, they're doing their head count again, like the first film. But this time, Kevin is actually in the van. So, okay, that's a relief. Kevin's in the van. Good. He's not left home alone. What happens, though, is that they're running through the airport, and everybody can relate to just running through the airport. You're trying to catch your flight during the holidays. There's so much chaos, especially if you travel with children. It is a lot of chaos. It's so important to hang on to your kids' hands when you're running through an airport or anything like that. So Kevin is asking his dad, "Dad, I need batteries for my talk boy." He said, "Kevin, it's in my bag. I'll get it to you later." Kevin can't wait, apparently. So he's trying to run and catch up with his family. And he's looking at his dad's backpack. And he finds the batteries. And he's like, okay. I'm just going to stop for a little bit and reload my talk boy, put the batteries in, and then I'm going to catch up with my family. So he finally puts the batteries in his talk boy. He is trying to run to catch up with his family. And when he runs to catch up with his family, we see the family going to the right, which is the Miami flight. And Kevin, who he thinks he's still following his dad, the man is going to the left, which is the New York flight. So you can guess what Kevin did. He went to the right with the New York flight. And he's thinking, oh, okay, cool. I'm on the plane with my family. I didn't get lost this time. But he did get lost because he's on a flight to New York and his family's on a flight to Miami. And even his mom on the plane, she's like, "I feel like we left something." Really? Yeah, I feel like we left something. And of course, you know, her husband is like, "No, you know, Kevin's here this time. We didn't leave him." Okay, sure. But anyway, to get through the film, because I can't tell everything of the film. Kevin is in New York. Yeah, Kevin's in New York. His parents and his family are in Miami. Once they do their bag check, they find out that once again they left Kevin, which I'm gonna have to look get a real I am judging these parents because this is the second time they have left Kevin. So they are very neglectful and they need to pay attention to all their children. And I know Kevin causes so much trouble and he can be bratty, but you are going to have to keep a close eye on all your kids, okay? Because you cannot keep leaving Kevin. And, you know, if the third movie has nothing to do with Kevin, well, I guess it does in a way. But anyway, if there was a third movie with this cast, and they left him again. I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway. So Kevin finds out he's in New York and his family is in Florida. And he's like, "Oh my God, this is great. I can finally have a little vacation for myself away from my family." So he goes and explores all the sights of New York. He's at the hot dog stand. The Statue of Liberty. He's on top of the skyscraper. He's everywhere, you know, just taking in all the sights, taking pictures. He still has his dad's bag, which has Christmas money in it. So he remembers from when he was at home that the Plaza Hotel was in New York. And he checks in and he's like, "Oh, my dad wanted me to check in. He's on business. Here's his credit card." So the problem with using, of course, somebody else's credit card is it raises suspicion, which Tim Curry, who is the hotel management, he's just starting to get a little suspicious that this kid is checking into the Plaza Hotel and he can't ever find his dad. Because throughout the film, he's like, oh, your dad needs to sign this bill. He's like, oh, he just left. Oh, this, oh, that. So it's starting to get a little suspicious, I would say. But yeah, so just like the first film, you know, we see Kevin enjoying just being by himself. But in the hotel, like, he's ordering room service. He's eating ice cream, cheese pizza, all the desserts. He's just enjoying himself. And once again, we see our favorite film, the 1940s gangster, Johnny, which is used as a diversion tactic later on in the film for Kevin to get away from hotel management when they find out that the credit card is stolen. Oh boy. So we think that Kevin is in New York alone, right? But lo and behold, our favorite comedy duo has broken out of prison from the first film, and they're in New York, and their new tactic is to rob toy stores because those toy stores have charity money. So they're going to rob the biggest toy store in New York, which Kevin went to, and they ran into each other some kind of way in New York, and he found out their plan, and he basically lured them to his uncle's old abandoned apartment he was renovating. So there's new turf now for Kevin to do his tricks. But going back a little bit, so hotel management runs the credit card and they find out that it's stolen. It's not his or whatever. So they confront Kevin and says, hey, this card is stolen. We need to take you down to the police, which would be good because that's how his family could locate him, right? But Kevin runs, which is not good to have a kid running along in New York. So he runs and he gets away from hotel management. And this is where the run-in with, he runs and then he finds out that his uncle lives in New York, but then he sees that there's nobody in the uncle's building, blah, blah, blah. Running through this movie as quickly as I can. So anyway, going back to Marv and Harry robbing the toy store. So Kevin diverts their plans and he lures them to his new trap house, no pun intended, of his uncle's renovated house or apartment building. So there's all these new tricks now that some people say it was a little too violent or gruesome, but I thought they were just as fine as the others. I don't know if it was because, and then in the Home Alone 2, that he's in this renovated, dirty looking house, apartment building. I don't know if the setting was different, that people kind of wasn't vibing with the new traps that Kevin set, or they were too violent, but that's what the critics were saying. Anyway, some of my favorite Home Alone burglar traps. So Marv and Harry have a little bit of PTSD from the first Home Alone film when they went through all those traps, right? So they're kind of just, you know, touching doorknobs carefully. They're looking around, looking up, looking down. Okay, testing out everything. All right, we think we got it. He's not at his house. There's nothing he can do to us at this old abandoned apartment, or this apartment that looks, it's being renovated. So the first trap that I like was Marv. So Marv is pulling the door, right? And the door handle comes off and it's attached to a string. And I don't know why he keeps pulling the string, but the string on the other side of the door is attached to a stapler gun or stapler machine. Oh gosh. So he's pulling it and he, oh boy. Yeah. So he's pulling really hard. He's like, oh my God, what's on the other side of this door? And of course some staplers come and, or they're probably nails. I don't know. It's probably a nail gun. Anyway, it shoots him in the nuts and then he turns around and then it shoots him in his ass. And then I think the other one shoots him in the face or something like that. It sounds more violent than I'm describing, but it's not that bad. The other trap that I like is when Marv comes into the apartment and he isn't looking where he's going. So he's like, all right, I came in. He's kicked the door open. He takes his second step and he falls straight into the basement. And he didn't see that there was a gaping hole right there. So he falls straight to the basement on his face, which would kill the average person, but not Marv, right? Because this is a Looney Tunes type trap. Looks like most of my favorite traps in Home Alone 2 have to do with Marv, because here goes another one. Marv slips on this goo that Kevin orchestrated in the basement area, and he's trying to catch his footing, and he slides on his back into a shelf full of paint cans, and all these cans fall on him. Imagine how painful that is. The other Marv trap that I like was that when Marv, I know, right? Yes, the high-pitched scream. Oh, I love it. I love it. Thank you. The next trap I like is when Marv is going to wash his face, you know, because he has all this paint on his face. He's going to this sink and he's like, okay, I'm finna wash all this stuff off my face. And he doesn't know that the sink is attached to high voltage jumper cables. So as soon as he touches the sink handles, he's electrocuted. And you would think, oh my God, this is horrible. But, you know, it's Home Alone, so we laugh. But anyway, he's being electrocuted. And he turns into a skeleton that's screaming as Cass 3200 said, it's like the high-pitched scream, which is very delightful to hear. It will shatter your eardrums. His scream is just infamous. But it was really funny to see just him turn to a skeleton and imagine a skeleton screaming and there's a high-pitched sound that comes out the skeleton's mouth. Well, this one is Harry. So Harry, he's entering the apartment, and I don't know why he falls for this again, but when he's entering in one of the doors, the string is attached to a blowtorch, and it sets his head on fire. And he's trying to turn on the sink to put, you know, the fire out of his head, but the sink won't turn on. So he sees water in the toilet. And he sticks his head in the toilet, but the toilet is full of kerosene and it explodes. But don't worry, Harry is still alive and okay, because this is Home Alone too. Oh boy. So when Marv and, you know, they go through all the traps and he's brutally punishing these men. And rightfully so. And I laugh at every one of the traps that Kevin sets for Marv and Harry. Very Looney Tunes-esque, as I mentioned. You know, so Kevin's running away after all the traps he set for them. And he runs. Yes. Kaz 3200 says, I like the continuity in the second where Harry remembers the hot doorknob from the first and checks it. Exactly. Yeah, Harry has PTSD, as Kaz mentioned. He's testing out all the doorknobs and he is turning on lights like light switches, or he's pulling on lights and he's like, oh my God, okay, that's good, that's good. So you see this lead up and he's avoiding little traps here and there. And he's like, oh, okay, all right, I'm not going to get that trap. But I thought it was funny, Cass, that he still fell for the trap that the string was attached to the blowtorch when he opened the door, because that happened in the first film. So it was very strange that he fell for that one. But so Kevin is running away and he's running toward the park because the rest of his final trap, which he will set off fireworks because he called the police by this time, which he should have called first, but it's fine. He wanted to torture them. He has fireworks he's going to set off in the park. So that's why he's running, because he told the police, look for the fireworks in the park, because that's where Harry and Marv will be. So he's running into the park, but Harry and Marv catch up with him and they're soaked in this kerosene, goo, whatever they're in. And they pull out a gun. And this is where it gets kind of dark, because you think, oh my gosh, this is over with for Kevin. So they pull out this gun and they say, this is it for you, kid. Earlier in the film, Kevin befriend a homeless lady who lived in the park, Central Park, and she had a lot of pigeons. So they call her Pigeon Lady, and a lot of people ran from her. Kevin ran from her, but he got to know her. So, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover type thing. So when Kevin is confronted with a gun by Harry and Marv, we the audience think this is it. Kevin's gonna die. Well, the gun was covered in goo, but still, you know, they could still kill him. The pigeon lady comes out and she's like, Kevin, run. And she throws all these bird seeds on Marv and Harry. And it signals to the thousands of pigeons. I don't know how many pigeons it was. It signals to the thousands of pigeons to attack, but they're basically just, you know, going toward the bird seeds. So we see Harry and Marv covered in bird seeds, covered in pigeons. And then once again, we hear the infamous Marv scream, which is very high pitch. Now this time the police come and they see the sign, the signal that Kevin was talking about with the fireworks. So he sets off the fireworks and, you know, they finally arrest Harry and Marv. So they're safe. They're off the streets. Kevin's mom gets a flight to New York and she finds Kevin and they reunite, you know, and he's like, Mom, I love you. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. But the hotel was nice enough after Kevin's mom basically cussed out Tim Curry's character. the hotel was nice enough to let them stay one more night into the morning for Christmas. And the toy store owner provided gifts for the family to thank Kevin for saving his store and, you know, just alerting him of the robbery that Marv and Harry was about to do. So the family is staying in the hotel and they're opening their Christmas presents and it's looking like it's going to be a good ending to Home Alone 2, right? You got his family, him and Buzz make up. They're doing well. And, you know, once Kevin is opening his present, he realizes, my friend is out there in Central Park and it's Christmas. I think I have something for her. He goes out the hotel and he sees his friend, the pigeon lady, and he gives her a turtle dove. And he says, you know, I'm never going to forget you. A lot of people have forgotten you, but I won't. So here's a turtle dove, and it's like a ceramic turtle dove. And he's like, you have one and I have one. So no matter where we go, we would know that we're in each other's lives, something along that point. And that was a really sweet and touching moment in Home Alone 2. Now, you would think, okay, this is good. You know, we're ending on a good note. This is very sentimental. He gave his friend a turtle dove. But we see Rob Schneider coming to the door. And he's like, Buzz opened the door and he greets him. And he says, this is Mr. McAllister's hotel bill. And Buzz looks at the hotel bill and he's like, oh my God, he is screwed. I cannot wait to, oh, Dad. So you hear Kevin's dad scream across Central Park, I guess to the point that Kevin hears it. And he's like, you spent $967 on room service? So Kevin runs. We don't know if Kevin will come back or if his dad killed him or what, but it just faded to black. So I don't know what happened to Kevin to this day. If anybody has any speculations of what happened to Kevin McAllister, please let me know, because I'm very worried for that child that he has ran up his dad's credit card with all these hotel expenses in New York. Oh my gosh. But yeah. So basically, that is Home Alone 1 and 2. Yay! Now, a little bit of controversy that was with Home Alone 2 was that in the beginning, when Kevin was going into the Plaza Hotel, he runs into Donald Trump. And I think I read that Donald Trump kind of forced himself on the set because, you know, he was New York real estate at that time. He kind of forced himself on the set, forced himself in the movie. Like, I want to be part of this movie. So when Kevin is going through the halls of the Plaza Hotel, he runs into Donald Trump, which he doesn't even know who he is. He's like, excuse me, sir, do you know where I can check in? And Donald Trump's like, down the hall and to the left. And he's like, thank you. And, you know, back then you see it and you're like, oh my God, it's Donald Trump. So the controversy was, I think in 2018 or 2019, Macaulay Culkin signed a petition. And there was a petition going around to remove the scene of Donald Trump from Home Alone 2. And I think in some of the films, or some of the, I think some have removed, some of the stations have digitally removed Donald Trump from that scene in Home Alone 2, but some kept him. So that's the only controversy I know of. Also that Home Alone 2 did not really gross highest like Home Alone 1. I think it may just maybe 300 million. But a lot of people, like I said, had mixed reviews on Home Alone 2. They thought it was a little bit too violent. Some parts of it was dark. I'm assuming they're talking about when Kevin, let's see, I think that must have been when Kevin ran from the hotel and he was kind of lost, literally lost in New York, and it was nighttime. And he was going through Central Park and you see all these cast of characters. I think he runs into a prostitute. He runs into a homeless person that tells him watch where he's going. So that part did get a little scary and dark, but I think that was necessary because he was lost. And it's showing you how big New York City is. And if a 10-year-old kid is lost in New York, and it's nighttime, it can be a bit scary from his point of view. So we're just looking at it from Kevin's point of view, basically. But yeah, I like Home Alone 2. I would say for me, it is probably Home Alone 2, then 1. And I only say that because I don't know why, for some reason, Home Alone 2 resonates with me. When I went, like years and years and years later, I had my first trip to New York. And when I was in New York, I was with a group, a school group. all I thought about was Home Alone 2 when I was in New York. Like, I thought about, oh, this is where Kevin was. He shot here. He was here. He was there. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know why. I just thought about him. And I remember I went past this toy store, and I don't know the name of it. I went past a toy store, and all I thought about was Kevin McAllister and how much I really wanted to go into that toy store and just live out just that Christmas fantasy, just being in the toy store in New York. I don't know. There's something about Christmas in New York that's really magical to me. I would like to go to New York again, but during Christmas time, and just see the trees at Rockefeller Plaza, just like Kevin did, you know. So in that sense, I do relate to Kevin, you know, like he just wanted to see Christmas trees on Christmas. And there's no Christmas trees in Florida. Like, his family was going to Miami. So yeah, anyway, maybe that's why Home Alone 2 resonates with me. It just, I don't know. Whenever I saw Home Alone 2 as a kid, I wanted to go to New York. And I finally did go to New York. I was in college, and all I thought about was Home Alone 2. And I really wanted to go to the Plaza Hotel. I still want to go to the Plaza Hotel. So, you know, and Home Alone 1 is very dear to me too. So, but yeah, so Home Alone 1 and 2 are on Disney Plus now. And you can check those movies out. They also have Home Alone 3 and I believe Home Alone 4, which is a Disney film. Home Alone 3, I did see Home Alone 3. The plot's a little complex for me. It kind of, I don't know, it's not as magical as Home Alone 1 and 2. I mean, the kid is good that plays in Home Alone 3, but it has something to do with spies and all this other stuff. It's not for me. Home Alone 3 is not for me. It's a good film, but it doesn't have that Chris Columbus magic to it. And Chris Columbus just, he loves Christmas. So if you have a Christmas or a family-friendly film, Chris Columbus is your guy. And that's why every time you watch Harry Potter, The Sorcerer's Stone, I believe that's the first one, but forgive me if it's not, you have this sense of Christmas every time you see it, because that's the Chris Columbus magic that he brings to it. But anyway, so yeah, check out Home Alone 1 and 2 on Disney Plus now. I'm not sure how long it's going to be on Disney Plus, but check it out while you can. I'm pretty sure you can go to Amazon if you would like these holiday classics. Check out Home Alone 3 and 4. Maybe you'll like it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch Home Alone 4 since I already seen 3. And whenever I watch films, I have to see the completion of the collection. So I'll watch Home Alone 4 and see what that's about. Maybe it's good. I don't know. Nobody beats Macaulay Culkin. Like, Macaulay Culkin is Home Alone 4. Yeah, I know, right? don't watch anything past Home Alone 2. I agree with you, but you know, since it's a collection of films, I'll go ahead and watch Home Alone 4. But Home Alone 1 and 2 are the staple, and those are the two films you should just focus on, to be honest. It's like Godfather 1 and 2, but I don't want to get into a controversy. But yes, Godfather 1 and 2. So don't even talk about 3. But anyway, where can you find us? All right, so we are on Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook at Two Blurred Girls. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Blurred2Girls. We're also on Instagram at Blurred Girls _podcast. You can subscribe and follow our YouTube channel, which is Two Blurred Girls Podcast. And we're also on Twitch, Two Blurred Girls Podcast, which shout out to Cass 3200. Thanks for interacting with the show. We also have an audio podcast, which I upload right after this show. We're on Apple, so don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, still under Two Blurred Girls Podcast. We are also on Google, and we are on iHeartRadio. We are on Anchor Podcasts. We're on Good Pods. Good Pods is like Facebook, but for podcasters. If you are on Good Pods and you are a podcaster, be sure to share our episode and give us a like and rate us. We really appreciate it. We're also on Amazon Music and on Audible as well, and on other streaming platforms wherever you can find your podcasts. Next week, we will continue the Christmas films. And I think next week, Tamara should be here. And she said she wanted to do A Christmas Story, a 1989 classic. So we'll review the Christmas Story Friday, next Friday. So be sure to join us. And I think on the 24th, we will probably be off. So we probably won't have any shows on Christmas Eve. So don't miss us too much. We'll still be back probably on New Year's Eve. But stay tuned. Follow our social media pages, which will give you updates on the show and what we have coming up and if we have to cancel any podcasts and anything like that. So thanks for joining us. And like I said, next week we're going to review The Christmas Story. So we're going to continue on with the holiday movies. Thanks for joining. Bye.